So today's reading is from Luke chapter 6, verses 12 to 26, and it's the 12 apostles along with blessings and woes. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spend the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles. Simon, whom he named Peter, his brother Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas, son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. He went down with them and stood on a level place. A large crowd of his disciples was there, and a great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem and from the coastal region around Tyre and Sidon, who had come to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. Those troubled by impure spirits were cured, and the people all tried to touch him because power was coming from him and healing them all. Looking at his disciples, he said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven, for that is how their ancestors treated the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when everyone speaks well of you, for that is how their ancestors treated the false prophets."
One of the things one misses when one's kids grow up, there are lots of things one doesn't miss when one things grow up, I will admit. But there is one thing that I really used to enjoy doing, and that was reading them stories. Reading children's stories is great fun. I have been known to fall asleep whilst doing it. I remember being woken up by my son saying, "Daddy, you're halfway through, wake up." "Did I drop off?" "Yes." "Okay." But the thing is, there's some brilliant books out there. One of my favourites was this book, The Topsy Turvies. Has anyone ever read The Topsy Turvies? Well, let me read it to you. Well, I'll read the start for you, because you didn't come here to hear me read stories. "Once upon a time, there lived a family called the Topsy Turvies. The Topsy Turvies always got up at midnight. They put on their pajamas and went upstairs and had dinner. 'Eat up, Minx,' said Mr. Topsy Turvy." "Minx juggled with the sausages." "Clever girl," said Mr. Topsy Turvy. "Jinx, stop eating with your fork," said Mrs. Topsy Turvy. "You know that's for combing your hair. Please use your fingers and toes." Could you pass the jam, Minx?" said Mr. Topsy-Turvy. Minx dipped her fingers in the jar and hurled the jam at her father. "Thanks," he said. "Could you pass the whipped cream, please, Jinx?" said Mrs. Topsy-Turvy. Jinx flung a handful of cream at his mother. "Thanks, dear," she said. Well, it goes on. It's fantastic. They go to school and the children teach the adults. They go to the playground and the adults on the swings. Then they watch TV. The TV's upside down, but that's okay. They're topsy-turvies. They're standing on their heads, so it all looks fine. It's a great book. And if you'd like to borrow it, do let me know. But actually, it makes a really good point, because one day their neighbor knocks on their door and says, "Will you look after our daughter for us, because we've got to go away for a morning?" And this daughter is amazed, because this is a house where everything's back to front. You don't draw on bits of paper, you draw on the wall. You don't eat your pudding second. Oh yeah, I forgot there were children here. This is just a story, it's not to be done at home. Please do not try to attempt this. But it's fascinating, because but what is normal to the topsy-turvies is abnormal to them. 5 years ago, we, as you will all know, were in the middle of a COVID pandemic. We wouldn't have been meeting together, we would have been perhaps outside or perhaps sitting at home waiting for the Prime Minister. But one of the things that I really noticed about that time was how those who were regarded as heroes changed. Before the pandemic, we idolized Messi and Ronaldo. They win all the Ballon d'Ors. They're amazing. We idolized pop stars. Oh, we want to go and see them. We celebrated horse racing and football and all these things. Then during COVID, nobody cared about footballers because there was no football. No one cared about sport because there wasn't really a lot of sport. Instead of having selfies with singers and sporting stars, we wanted to meet the nurse that looked after our dad. Or we want to meet the doctor who did this. Before coronavirus, we stood and applauded football players. Oh, bravo, bravo. And then in coronavirus, we stood and applauded the NHS for doing their best. The pop charts before COVID were full of young musicians, full of talent. And yet in April 19th, 2020, Captain Tom Moore was sitting at number one in the charts. I think the oldest number one artist, he was 99 at the time, ever. What we used to say was, it's a new normal. But what the topsy-turvy reminds me and what coronavirus illustrates is, what is normal? Is normal what we are used to experiencing, or is that just an illusion? There is a real, true, deeper normal. This passage, as Lucy's already started to unpack for us, which was fantastic, reminds us that Jesus is telling us what the reality is and how it differs from our experience. Now, you're a very astute bunch. You will have recognized much of these words from Matthew's Gospel. Do you remember the Sermon on the Mount? That fantastic treatise where Jesus climbs a mountain and the crowds gather and he says, "Blessed are the..." Well, there are some similarities and difference between this Luke's account. Similarities between the Sermon on the Mount and how it starts. Both of the discourses start with the Beatitudes. Blessed are those, not so blessed these. They use a similar structure in Matthew and Luke of blessings and not so blessed. And they both actually come straight after the disciples are called. And that's important, and we'll see a little bit later. But Luke says something different. Luke talks about the location being different. And location matters a lot in the speeches in the Bible. Many years ago, it must have been about 86, a new Russian politician who I'd never heard of, Boris Yeltsin, made an address to the world's media. Politicians make addresses to the world media all the time, don't they? And he did a fair few. What was different about this address was the context of it. There was a civil war about to start. The old guard were trying to take over. And he made his address in front of Parliament from the top of a tank. Do you remember, any of you remember that? Very powerful image for me as a sort of a 16, 17-year-old. Context matters. And actually, Luke is trying to say this is what he calls, this is called the Sermon on the Flat Place, as opposed to the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus went down and stood on a level place. Now, the point about where you do your talk is quite important. The mountain is a place that symbolically is nearer God. When Elijah confronts Prophet Baal, he doesn't do it in a valley. He goes to the top of Mount Carmel. When Moses goes up to receive the Ten Commandments, he doesn't do it in a Taco Bell down by a motorway. He goes up Mount Sinai and meets God there. When Jesus is transfigurated, they're up a mountain. Hillsides are spiritual places. And what Luke's saying here is actually it's a flat place. This is a place where everyone is there. This is not just a spiritual place. This is a place where crowds can gather, where people are. So he went down, we just heard read, and stood in a level place. A large crowd of disciples were there, and a great number of people from Judea and Jerusalem and the coast of Tyre and Sidon who had come to hear him and be healed of their diseases. So the disciples are there. Then there's the followers of Jesus. Then there are those who are sort of interested. Then there are those who are less interested. Some who want to question Jesus. Some who want to be healed by Jesus. It's a mixed crowd. But as we all see, these words, these beatitudes, are addressed directly to the disciples. He's just appointed 12 men to be his followers and his, in a sense, his closest apprentices. He's going to show them, they're going to see things that no one else will see, hear things that no one else will hear. For 3 years, they'll see the miraculous. They'll see the amazing. They'll see thousands fed and people healed and Jesus walking on the water and the storm calmed. So as in a moment, as we go through these blessings and woes, just remember, these are directed at 12 people who will face impossible odds, will see amazing things, but also suffer incredible persecution. Only one of those 12 disciples will die of natural causes. We know what happened to Judas. The 10 of the others are all martyred. Peter on a cross, upside down, and so forth. Only John will reach an old age and die of natural causes. Now, what Jesus does here in Luke, which is slightly different in Matthew, is he harks back to an Old Testament format. And the Old Testament format has this idea of blessings and curses. So he gathers his disciples around him, and he starts to teach them. And what he does, he starts to use, in a sense, an echo of a format of teaching. You know, in schools, there are often different methods of teaching that were used. Do you remember Sokotoa, which was a way of saying side of something, 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 or Richard of York, wage battle in vain, which was something about something. I can't remember what it was, but I remember the thing. Was it to do with music? Was it note on Colours of the Rainbow? I should have listened more at school. There we go. So what Jesus does is take an Old Testament, one of these memory things, from Deuteronomy 11. See, God says, I am setting before you a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey my commands, it says in Deuteronomy, that I am giving you, a curse if you disobey the commands of the Lord. And so what he does is he takes this format of blessing and curse, or blessing and woe, and takes it into a new format. He changes it to the new kingdom ways. Let me just briefly show you what he does. And he does it, I hope you can read that, it's a bit small. He does that in a pair of couplets. He says, blessing, 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 blessing. And then repeats the opposite, woe or curse, woe, 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 woe. So he's trying to say, actually, are these disciples, you're my disciples, this is the way the world really is. We live in a topsy-turvy world, but actually the true worth of this world is like this. Robert Tannehill, an American Methodist theologian, makes a really interesting point in his commentary on this. He says, you have to imagine Jesus looking at those disciples. Imagine them being looked in the eye. Let me go back to the picture of them. He has literally just chosen them. He's chosen them to be his followers. And now he's going to tell them what that's going to mean. The first blessing and woe are these. Blessed are you who are poor, he says to his disciples as the crowds listen. For yours is the kingdom of God. But woe to you, or alas to you, who are rich, for you have received your comfort. We often look at Jesus' sayings and say, oh, that's spiritual poverty and that's spiritual riches. But frankly, I think in this case, these disciples are going to be poor. Peter was a fisherman. He's going to leave that for 3 years. Where is he going to get money from? From nowhere. These 12 men will know what it means to be poor. But, he says to them, you will be poor. You will be ragged. When someone's going past with a nice new oxen and you're jealous of it, remember, don't be. Because yours is the kingdom of God. Proverbs 30 has a wonderful phrase in it about poverty and about having too much or too little. I'm sure you're familiar with it. In Proverbs 30, it says this, keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor your name. Jesus is acknowledging to the disciples, you are going to be poor and it's going to hurt. You are going to be hungry and grab grain on a Sabbath to rub in your hands, as we heard last week. But you are part of this kingdom that I'm doing. This wonderful kingdom where you have a purpose and a reason, where you'll learn what real right and real wrong is. You'll have people around you to gather and help you and support you. But he also says, alas, if you are rich already, because you've already had all the comfort you're going to get. At the end of your life, that will all go and you will be poor. You won't be part of this kingdom, he says. Woe to you. The second blessing and woe. Blessed are you who hunger now and you will be satisfied. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Notice here we move into the future tense. You will hunger. Again, a reminder to the disciples that they've given it all up. Jesus is very open to them. This is not going to be an easy ride. Imagine going to a job interview and you're so pleased you've been selected and they say, it's fantastic news. The budget's gone. You don't get paid. You get no holiday. That's the way it's going to be. How would you feel? Not great. Or you apply for a job and get a job and resign your post and the company goes bust that you just applied to. The disciples, though, are being reminded, actually, you may struggle for food, but you will be satisfied. Interesting, isn't it? They will be satisfied, even though they are hungry. They will have good things. It will be worth it. Then he moves on to the third blessing and woe. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. I don't think this is about those that are mourning or upset or in real trouble. I don't think Jesus is trying to say to us, oh, you know, you've got bad news, you're weeping. Don't worry, you'll laugh. It'll be fine. I don't think that's what he's saying. I think what he's talking about is those who weep over the state of the world they see. And then you might say, who doesn't read the news and weep? Who doesn't say, not another conflict, not another problem with the economy, not another issue with justice, not another uncertainty, not another penny on my petrol, surely not. There's a sense in which Jesus is saying, actually, his disciples, you are going to be upset by what you see. Lepers told to stay away and don't come near me. People having burdens put on by the Pharisees. Romans taxing double they should do. You will be upset. But there is good news that won't last forever. But what about you? Woe to you who laugh now. Woe to those of you, Jesus says, who think, actually, this is a bit over okay. The Romans are here. They're going to tax. I'll take a cut. There's an opportunity. Oh, it's difficult. Yeah, there's conflict, but there's always money to be made in conflict. Woe to those who look at the world and go, ah, excellent. They may laugh at the situation they see, but they will mourn and weep. And the last couplet together. Blessed are you when men hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day, he goes on, and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. For that is how the fathers treated the prophets. But woe to you when all men speak well of you. For that is how the fathers treated the false prophets. Those disciples will be hated. They will say things, and it will not go down well with everybody. They will be stoned. They will be put in prison. They will be beaten. They will be slandered. They will be killed ultimately, most all but one of them. But actually, Jesus is saying, these things may come to you, but you are blessed because you are part of this kingdom I am making. You are part of something beyond this world's reckoning at this time, but which they will come to see is amazing. As I said before, these were words spoken eye to eye, Jesus to disciples. But also they are words that echo through the ages to us. An American author, Dallas Willard, wrote a book many years ago, actually, called The Divine Conspiracy. I've read the book, and I can remember one thing about it, which is what I'm going to share with you. It was right at the beginning, which probably tells you about my reading. He talks about a pilot who is flying with zero visibility. There's cloud or mist or whatever, and they can't see where they are. And they decide to rise above the clouds to get a better look of where they are. And as they rise up above the clouds, they hit the ground. Because what they have done is become disorientated and forgotten that they're actually flying upside down. So as they thought they were going up, they're actually going down. He writes this about that incident he'd read about. This is a parable of human existence in our times. Not exactly that everyone is crashing, though there is enough of that. But most of us as individuals and world society as a whole live at high speed and often with no clue as to whether we're flying upside down or right side up. Indeed, we are haunted by a strong suspicion that there may be no difference, or at least that is unknown or irrelevant. Jesus said to his disciples, the world is flying upside down. What they think will do them good will do them ill. But I tell you, right yourself up. The real blessings are different from the blessings the world tells you about. And that's true for us as well. Do we feel blessed? Or what do we mean by blessed? The challenge as followers of Jesus is to understand the right way up in this world. Riches is not about how much you have, perhaps, but how much you've been able to give away. Success is not what everyone else thinks of you, but is following the will of our God, our Father. Being loved is not about what people adore you and put you on a pedestal. It's about knowing that you're loved by God the Father and by people at church and by your family. How are we flying? How are we understanding the world? Are we topsy-turvies that think that what's around us, the world, is the normal, when in reality, Jesus says, the normal is completely different?